knowing and devotion. In the yogic culture, there are two aspects to the word Shiva. The word literally means that which is not. Everything that is has come from that which is not. If you look up at the sky, you will see many stars and celestial objects, but still the biggest presence out there is a vast emptiness. It is in the lap of this nothingness that the dance of creation is happening right now. This emptiness, which is the very basis of creation, is referred to as Shiva. Another dimension of Shiva is Adiyogi, the first yogi, who opened up the incredible science of yoga for humanity. The yogic culture moves seamlessly from invoking Shiva as the basis of creation to invoking Shiva as the first yogi. Thus, Shiva becomes personified as Shiva. Is this contradictory? Not at all, because once yoga or ultimate union has happened, there is no longer a distinction between ultimate reality and the one who has experienced it. In accordance with this logic, the yogic culture offers two ways to reach the ultimate state: becoming everything or becoming nothing. The path of jnana, knowing, or the path of bhakti, devotion. If you want to experience Shiva, or the dimension beyond the physical, you either come to terms with the laws that govern the non-physical realm, or you dissolve into this dimension, because it spells freedom from the laws that govern the physical realm. If you want to experience a mountain peak, you either elevate yourself to that level or simply look up. These are two fundamental ways, otherwise no meeting is possible. Through knowledge, you aspire to meet that which is not face to face. Through devotion, you strive to obliterate your limited and rigid persona and move towards a flexible state from which you approach the dimension beyond the framework of your likes and dislikes. These likes and dislikes are the very basis of your persona. The endless nature of human desire is an expression of longing for infinite nature or life beyond physical existence. Infinity and zero are just positive and negative expressions of the same reality. Devotion means dropping the dualities of like and dislike, attachment and aversion. It means what's fine and what's not fine do not exist for you anymore. Everything is fine. When a devotee says, God is everywhere, or everything is God, he is essentially saying everything is fine. But believing that God is everywhere, he or she arrives at a deep state of acceptance that is transformative and liberating. Bhakti is all-encompassing, all-inclusive. It does not discriminate. This is the nature of the ultimate reality as well. Since ancient times, devotion has been seen as the most important spiritual path because it is the quickest. But it has its pitfalls. Path of knowing is harder, but it is an eyes-open path. Devotion, on the other hand, is an eyes-closed path. With knowing, every step you take forward or backward, you know where you're going. With devotion, whether you're moving toward your liberation or you have fallen into a pit, you have no clue. Generally, for most people, emotion is more intense than thought. That is why devotion has been glorified above all other paths. But without the right understanding and wisdom, walking the path of devotion can lead to all kinds of delusions. Devotion is a tool to transcend the dual nature of logic, but instead of transcending logic, one may end up denying logic altogether. So standing on a stable platform of logic before going into the fluid state of devotion becomes important. Conversely, many people believe that devotion has no place in the logical realm, but it is not true. Logic is essentially a cutting tool, an instrument of discernment. If your logic is like a machete, when you consider something, it will fall into two pieces. But if the scalpel of logic you employ is very finely honed, you can cut through something and still seem to leave it in one piece. When a fine swordsman uses his sword to cut a tree, it is said even the tree should not know, it should still stand as one. If your intellect becomes this refined, you will find devotion fits perfectly with your logic. Devotion can be very beautiful, joyous, ecstatic, but without the clarity of knowing, it could lead to stagnation. On the other hand, without emotion, spiritual practices can become barren, dry, and lifeless. Without bhakti, jnana becomes simply hair-splitting exercise. As I said earlier, if you want to experience a mountain peak, you either elevate yourself to that level or simply look up. The devotee knows that if you manage to ascend to meet the peak, you still only stand beside the peak. But if you become the valley, you hold the entire mountain in your lap. Yoga and intoxication. According to legend, Adiyogi drank Somarasa, the intoxicating juice of the moon. He simply imbibed the distilled essence of the moonbeams and was described as constantly drunk. Yogis are not against pleasure. They are unwilling to settle for little pleasures, that's all. They know if you drink a glass of wine, it just gives you a buzz, but tomorrow morning it gives you a headache and more. Yogis are not willing to settle for that. To enjoy intoxication, you must be totally drunk yet fully alert. I have never touched a substance, but if you look into my eyes, you will see that I am always stoned. I am totally drunk and fully aware. This is one of the pleasures that the science of yoga offers. The end goal is not just intoxication. This blissful state eliminates the fear of suffering. In this state of nameless ecstasy, there are no concerns about self-preservation. This is what makes a human being capable of being and acting in a way that can sometimes seem superhuman to others. Only when the gnawing anxiety of self-preservation is completely eliminated from your mind, would you dare to explore life. Otherwise, you only want to protect it. Once the fear of suffering is dropped, you can plunge into any situation without hesitation. Even if you have to go to hell, you will happily go there because you have no fear of suffering. When everybody was talking about going to heaven, Gautama the Buddha said, "You say everything is fine in heaven, so what will I do there? Let me go to hell and do something to help others, because anyway, I cannot suffer." As long as the fear of suffering persists, you will not dare to explore the deeper dimensions of life. Only this body needs to be protected. Nothing else within you needs protection. If you are willing to drop the ideas, philosophies and belief systems you're currently attached to, you can recreate your entire life in the very next moment. Love mantra. And what about love? Is there such a thing as unconditional love? Can it truly exist between two human beings? These are frequently asked questions. One day, Shankaran Pillai went to a park. He saw an attractive woman seated on a stone bench. He settled down on the same bench. After a few minutes, he moved a little closer. She moved away. He waited for a few minutes, then moved a little closer. she moved away. When he did this again, she moved to the very end of the bench. He went very close and put his arm around her. She shoves him away. Then he went down on his knees, plucked a flower, handed it to her, and said, "I love you, like I have never loved anybody in my life." The sun was setting. He looked at her with a melting gaze. Above all, the ambience was right. She thawed. Nature took over. They had their way with each other. The dusk deepened into night. Shankaran Pillai suddenly sprang to his feet and said, "It's 8 o'clock. I need to go." She said, "You just said you love me more than anyone else." "Yes, of course, but my wife is waiting." Generally, we have made relationships within frameworks that are comfortable and profitable for us. People have physical, psychological, emotional, financial, and social needs to fulfill. To fulfill these needs, one of the best ways is to tell someone, "I love you." This so-called love has become something of an open sesame mantra. You can get what you want by saying it. Love is a quality, not something that you do with somebody else. Every action that we do is in some way to fulfill certain needs. If you see this, then there is a possibility that you can grow into love as your natural quality. But you can go on fooling yourself into believing that relationships that you have made for convenience, comfort, and well-being are actually relationships of love. I am not saying there is no experience of love at all in these associations, but it is within certain limitations. It does not matter how many times true love has been proclaimed. If few expectations and requirements are not fulfilled, things fall apart. This is essentially a mutual benefit scheme. There is really no such thing as conditional love and unconditional love. There are conditions and there is love. When you talk about love, it has to be unconditional. The moment there is a condition, it just amounts to a transaction. Maybe a convenient transaction, maybe a good arrangement, but that will not fulfill you or transport you to another dimension. It is just convenient. Love need not necessarily be convenient. Most of the time, it is not. It takes life. You have to invest yourself. If you have to be in love, you should not be. The English expression, falling in love, is very significant. You don't climb in love. You don't stand in love. You don't fly in love. You fall in love. Something of you should fall or melt away to accommodate the other. There is a distinction between a transaction and a love affair. A love affair need not be with any particular person. You could be having a great love affair with life itself. What you do and do not do is in accordance with the circumstances you are in. Our actions are always molded by the demands of external situations. But love is an inner state, and how you are within yourself can definitely be unconditional. Acts of love can become tedious and stressful over a period of time. You realize love is not something that you do. Love is the way you are. Sadhana. Love is never between two people. It is what happens within you, and your interiority need not be enslaved to someone or something else. Try this for 15 minutes or so. Go sit with something that means nothing to you right now. Maybe a tree, a pebble, a worm, or an insect. Do it a few days in a row. After a while, you will find you can look upon it with as much love as you do your wife or husband or mother or child. Maybe the worm does not know this. That doesn't matter. If you can look at everything lovingly, the world will burst forth in beauty in your experience.